Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Untalented Pod, where we're joined today by Tamryn, the CCO and co-founder of Hijinx.
Hi.
Hi, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
No, super excited to get into it. As always, I'm going to start with this or that, just amazing, to warm us up, get us into the mode. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. Go. Leading or doing?
Leading.
Chocolate or crisps?
Chocolate.
Progressive or innovative?
Ooh, innovative.
Nice. Photos or videos?
Ooh, I kind of like both, but I'd say probably videos.
Okay, nice. Intuition or insights?
Insights.
Films or books?
Films.
Winter or summer?
Summer, definitely. I think Kiwi to be, right?
So true. I mean, it helps that we're in the midst of December right now as well. Cats or dogs?
Cats. I know lots of people are dog people, but definitely cats.
Yeah, I am such a dog person. Ambition or comfort?
Ambition.
Skill or fame?
Skill.
Nice. You'll be pleased to know that that is over. It's always just fun to be like, I've started using the same questions for everyone that I chat to. I'm always like, oh, never thought like that. Or like, it's always different answers, which is good. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited to get into a chat. Obviously, as always, the first question that we ask is, who was the first person to make you feel talented?
Such a great question. I have to say my mum, because, mm-hmm, you know, I know it's probably most people's answer is, you know, one of their parents, but it was definitely my mum, 100%. She always told me I could do anything. So, mm-hmm, and that sort of carried through. And I think outside of family, my art teachers, I always had really good art teachers.
Nice.
And they were just really supportive. And they were just like, if you wanted to do anything in the arts or in anything creative, they were super supportive. Mm. So probably great art teachers and also great mum.
Yeah, nice. It's so important to have people, I think, or like outside of your family network who can kind of instill that you can like do things. And even if it's something, I don't know, I think when you're at school, it's always like English or maths or science. And it seems like they're always the be all and end all. But to have someone saying, well, no, if you are good at the arts and want to do that, then that's fine. And like, there is scope for you to be good at that as well. I think it's so important.
Definitely. I couldn't agree more. Mum's really creative as well. So I think it really helped. She never went into doing anything creative for a career. So I think she always just wanted to make sure that if that was something I wanted to do, mm-hmm, that I had a path to doing that, yeah, which is nice. Great.
Yeah, because I think as well, like there was so much less access, mm, probably for her and then, and actually then being like, wait, this is a thing that you can do. And like, I want you to sort of live that for me almost, if it is something that obviously you want.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, I've like, it seems to be those sort of pivotal moments with teachers or with family that people are like, wait a minute, I can actually do that. And like, it's a thing, which is always exciting. Can you tell us more about like how you got started into the advertising space, and where that came from, the beginning of your journey?
Well, I grew up in New Zealand, mm-hmm, so that's my strange accent that you can hear. And I did a degree in fine arts, mm-hmm, which I think I knew in year one I wasn't going to pursue sort of a fine arts career. But I loved art and creativity, and I love creating and making stuff. So I knew I wanted to play in that industry, well, in that world, mm-hmm, but I knew I didn't want to be a fine artist. And I think I sort of very quickly started looking for what I actually wanted to do. And I had a tutor in art school who was an ex-advertising art director. Yeah, I think it's sort of old school Saatchi's, New Zealand. And he was really interesting because he, basically through him, I discovered this entire industry that I had no idea about, mm-hmm, at all. I mean, they sort of didn't really talk about it at school, didn't know it was an option. And I was like, I want to do that. So I went to Axis Ad School. I think it's Media Design School now in New Zealand. And it's like an ad school, and they team you up with a partner and then you get a portfolio together. So that was absolutely fantastic and sort of sets you up for, you know, success, particularly in the New Zealand market, because they're churning out lots of grads, mm-hmm, and there's not that as many jobs. So it's quite competitive. So I did that. And then I went straight into TWA Auckland, which was amazing, under some incredible incredible creatives. And it was around the time that they were sort of winning Grand Prix for Adidas work.
Okay.
For their Adidas work. And it was just, yeah, it was a great place to kind of learn how to be a creative and sort of cut your teeth and understand the industry. And then I moved on to Colenso BBDO, which again, just like a fantastic agency. Super, super competitive. So you, I don't know, you really had to work.
Yeah, it's like baptism of fire, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And I was there for maybe just under 2 years and I decided I was going to move to London.
Okay.
I'd never been to London ever before moving here. I just packed up my whole life, sold everything, put everything in a suitcase and came over.
Oh my God. How was that? I bet you got off a tube or something and was like, what have I done? Why am I here?
We still laugh about our first, because it was during the Olympics.
Okay.
So it was a great time to come to London. Everybody was really, you know, it was just the atmosphere was great. Everybody was like nice to each other on the tube.
For the one time that ever happened.
Yeah. And I still remember getting, we had jet lag. So we were up super, super early. And just wandering around Piccadilly Circus when there was no one else there, you know, like at 5 in the morning.
There is nothing better than doing that, I think. Like, it feels so surreal. Like, when COVID, like the first lockdown, I remember I like was out for a walk or something and managed to walk into Central and was just like, whoa, this is so weird. It felt like almost dystopian, doesn't it?
Yeah.
To be in a city that's so empty. It's strange.
I laugh at how naive and how naive we were to everything, but I love it. So we've been here for about 12 years and my first agency in London was Publicis.
Okay.
So I teamed up with a brilliant copywriter from Manchester and she'd moved down at the same time, sort of similar level, same age, mm-hmm. and wanted the same thing. So we teamed up and went for it and we got hired by Andy Bird. He'd just taken over CCO of Publicis London at the time. And we were there for, I think, about 2 years,
mm-hmm.
which was nice. Great. And we left there to go to BBH, which was great. So being a whole bunch of different
yeah,
agencies.
Yeah, so good. It's so nice to have found a partner as well who you're kind of like, but both not really got anything to lose, but everything to gain. It's like, we're both here in a strange city. We've never been here before or like never worked here before. So it must have felt like almost comforting to have someone to do it with too.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And like we definitely were on the same page about probably most things and we just had a lot of fun. We just had a great time. We worked hard, but we also played really hard and just really enjoyed London as well. Mm-hmm. You know, just made the most of all the opportunities of, you know, going out and all of the sort of free tickets to things that you get. We probably went to everything.
Yeah, but that's like, I think it's so the part of it though. That's like, I don't know, it feels like it's kind of maybe been forgotten a little bit of you are allowed to have fun and like the fun part of it is so important because then you're actually going to want to work hard and like be part of that sort of London rat race type of thing as long as you're having fun with it too. And I feel like it's maybe been lost a little bit in recent years.
Yeah, totally. I think the fun, and I think we'll probably cover it off later on, the fun definitely seems to have gone from the industry a little bit. You know, it's definitely not as, I don't know, it just doesn't seem as optimistic as it used to be. We were sort of these two people in a new city having honestly the best time. And I'm not saying that they weren't hard moments. I mean, they definitely were hard moments. We sort of, neither of us knew anyone. We were just going out, you know, and giving it a punt. But it all sort of worked out. I think it worked out really well. And then we were at BBH for about just over 3 years. And that was great. It's a great agency. It's got an incredible history. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot. BBH is so great to really hone your craft.
Yeah.
They're really, really, really tough on craft. And I think that was really, really good, particularly as an art director at the time. I was just like really into just crafting everywhere. You had to be,
of course,
because you didn't want to take anything to the head of art without being crafted. You'd probably throw a book at your face.
You're like quivering.
Yeah, basically. So I think that was really, and it's a great, I mean, it's a huge agency, lots of incredible people that they've got there, so it was just really great learning, really. And we left there, I had the summer off and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. We went to go freelance separately.
Okay.
It wasn't like a big meltdown or anything. We just wanted different things for our career.
Yeah.
I was like very, very, very intent on starting to step up. I was like, I'm quite ambitious. I was like, I definitely saw a path that I wanted to follow. And so I wanted to go and do that. And I ended up at a little agency called Joint, which was really, I mean, great. I mean, it couldn't have been better in terms of, you know, being almost like an antidote to the all the negatives of a big agency.
Yeah.
Because it just was, you know, really lovely and friendly and just great people and really talented people and just a really good atmosphere. So I really enjoyed that.
Nice. That's such a nice way to put it as well. It's like you don't want to stop making and doing, but you also need that breathing space away from like that big agency feeling. And yeah, that's a really nice way to put it. I've not heard it be put like that before.
But actually, I ended up making more there in a year than I probably did in my entire time at BBH, to be honest, because it's just at the bigger agencies, there's just so many more layers. And
yeah,
and particularly in a huge creative department, just the sort of work that we were making probably wasn't what we wanted to be making. And at a smaller agency, there's arguably more opportunity to do the sorts of work that you want to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, we made loads and loads of work in a short, quite a short amount of time and had a lot of fun doing it as well. I mean, people, as I say, really, really talented, super, super nice. So that was really great. But like every, well, like many small agencies, like, as I say, I was like really, really intent on, I had a very clear career path. I knew what I wanted. And there was only so far I could get there. So I definitely wanted to start stepping up into a more leadership role. And that's basically the literal only reason I left.
Yeah. It's such a shame as well when you're like, oh, I could stay and it would be so lovely and I would continue to make work. But it's also, it's great to be able to recognize that as somewhere is not serving you in the sort of next step and the long-term goals of what you need. Because I do think that it's easy to get comfortable, isn't it? And think, oh, well, it's great here. I'm having a great time making great stuff, so I'll just stay. And then before you know it, you feel like you've kind of missed out on taking that next step or that next like growth journey as well. So yeah, it's interesting to be able to know that you recognize that and then action it as well.
Yeah, I think it's really important. Well, for me, it was really important. And this sounds terrible, but like having the title of creative director was really, really important to me. And I know a lot of people will see that as title chasing and it's sort of like can be seen as, I don't know, just something, I don't know, just wasteful. But I really, really, really wanted to be a creative director. I knew I was super ambitious. I wanted to run an agency one day. I knew that I had to start stepping up to do that. And I also quite like leading teams. Yeah. I just think it's just something that I've always wanted to do and really enjoy. So I went for that basically. I went to VML Y&R as a creative director and worked there for about 3 years.
Yeah. So I think it's important to get the title. Like I think it is easy for people to argue that case of that saying, well, you're just title precious or it doesn't matter, it doesn't make an effect. But it does. Like it's that almost gravitas of having the title and then kind of being able to live up to the title, but with the recognition of what you are doing and where you stand. And I think like, especially for women in the industry, it's so important to have that recognition and like be able to back yourself and think, well, I do have this title. I'm here because I'm worthy of being here and they've hired me for this because they know that I can do it. Like I think it is important and I think it's a shame that it does get sort of like, oh, why do you want that? Why do you have to have that? And yeah, it's a weird dynamic that is still, because I do think it is still a conversation of like the title chasing thing. But no, I think it is a really strange sort of position to be in to have to justify why you should have a title that you deserve.
Yeah, I mean, especially as you say, for women, I think it's almost vital. Like,
yeah.
It really is. It's the difference between people actually listening to you in the room, genuinely. For me, that was the case. You know,
yeah.
It was the difference between somebody actually asking my opinion or me just being a bum on a seat in a meeting that nobody, either somebody was going to repeat what I just said 5 minutes later as their own.
Yeah.
Which we used to play a game actually and count how many times in meetings that happened. And it was a lot.
And you're like, hi, just said that. Yeah. Because then you can't be that pick me person to be like, well, that was my idea. I just said that. Like you would never, ever do it.
No, I counted one meeting actually. My partner and I were keeping count and I think we counted 14 times Yeah, it was a long meeting.
Whoa, yeah. And a very, very frustrating one when you're both sat in silence, seething with internal rage.
I think once you notice it, you can't unnotice it. Yeah. You're just like, well, this is just something that happens. But I think that when you have that title, it just happens a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually have a voice of opinion in the room, mm-hmm. and people are looking at you to make decisions. And I think that was something I hadn't done for years because I'd just never been in a position to do that. And I loved it. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely the right move for me.
Nice. And was that your first experience with leading a team in a department at VML?
Yeah, for sure. And it was great. I really loved it. Great creative department. There was, at the time I came in, it was Mark Rolfe was leading the creative department. He's founded one of the biggest agencies in London.
Mm-hmm.
He's worked on some incredible accounts, and he's a great creative and an honestly lovely person. So he was amazing to work under and mm-hmm. learn from, and, you know, just to kind of have that experience watching him do it, I think was just brilliant. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so important to be able to sort of learn from experience and learn from someone else as well. And I think it gives you so much more space to carve out how you want to do things when you have someone leading you that has so many amazing traits that you can then, you just naturally embody them, don't you? Rather than sort of having to start from scratch and be like, oh, wow, I've got so much more responsibility, not only as a creative, but now I'm looking after all of these humans as well who have like lives and problems and everything else going on. So, I think I always sort of say to people, you need to look at who's leading departments and what you find inspiring about them when you are looking at places to consider new roles and that sort of thing.
Definitely. I mean, it's so important. If you're working under somebody who isn't a good leader, it can destroy everything, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it can be career, it can destroy careers, it can just destroy people's lives, you know, in terms of, you know, just making it really, really hard. So I think looking at who the leadership are and who you really want to work for, because, I mean, advertising, it's all people, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You've got big name agencies, but it's all the people. So you want to be aligning yourself with the right people and the people who you actually respect. I mean, it just makes a massive, massive difference.
Yeah, 100%. It does boil down to people and relationships. And because, if you think about it, if there's no relationships in place, nothing will ever get made or get sold or get done or get briefed. So, yeah, you really have to surround yourself with that network. And I also think because it is such an industry where you're consistently putting your like ideas on the line to be scrutinized, that you need to be in a nice environment to be able to receive that in a way that is positive still. I think it's like probably one of the only industries, isn't it, where it's like, well, you're actually just saying that something that I came up with in my own brain because of something else is not good. And it must be hard to digest. I don't know if I'd be cut out for it. I don't think I'd be like, oh god, you all hate me. And it's like, no, I'm just giving you constructive criticism on your idea. I don't know if I could do it.
I think creatives do forget though that this is about relationships. There's a lot of creatives that will just go in and I guess that's probably where the industry's taken the creative department is, you know, creatives are sort of put in a corner and like made to work and kept very far away from business or the general relationships. And what I really enjoyed about being a creative director was actually getting to chat to the clients and getting to understand their sort of needs and the business problems. And I mean, we're only, you know, as agency creatives, we're only a sort of micro part of their day, you know?
Yeah.
And hopefully a good part of their day. But just understanding that and that their whole world isn't the same as my whole world, mm-hmm. you know? And I just think it actually helps because you sort of take things a lot less personally than you would otherwise, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is so true. And I think there's that element of, I've spoken about it before, of creatives are so can forget like the commerciality value of it. Your creative needs to have commercial value because you are trying to sell something. But it's that like swings and roundabout system of how can you expect a creative to understand commerciality when they're so hidden away from all of the business stuff? Like,
exactly.
It's not something that comes natural to everyone because you haven't had exposure to it. And I think people suddenly work their way up and get to a CD level and they're like, oh, I have to deal with all this stuff now type of thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but I mean, we're not fine artists. You know, if I wanted to be a fine artist, I would have carried on that path, you know, where we are here to sell. You know, we just are, you know. And I think knowing that and understanding that gives you a bit more of a practical. I don't think there's anything wrong with creatives being practical, to be honest. Like, I know it's probably not seen as a great trait, but I think, you know, in terms of understanding a client's business, it's a fantastic trait, you know, really, you know, and understanding but the agency business as well, you know, which is something obviously now I have to do.
Yeah, of course. I mean, speaking of now, you're now obviously the co-founder and CCO of a new agency, Hijinx, which is super exciting. And I think, like you said before, you mentioned you always knew that you wanted to do this and step into this. So it must feel like, is this real? Like a kind of pinch me element. But yeah, please tell us all about it. I think everyone will be really keen to hear more.
Yeah, so Hijinx has been a long time in the making in terms of just me wanting to do it. I think I didn't realize how long I'd been talking about it until I did it. And then people reminded me how many years.
Everyone was like, finally.
You've been saying it for ages. Yeah, it's great. So we're a creative collective who believe in positivity through creativity. That's what we stand for. And it's in absolutely everything that we do. So it's in the way that we work together. It's in the way that we work with our client partners. And it's in the work that we put out into the world. I think it's just something that felt right in terms of a positioning for us all as a, you know, from our personalities. And it's something that just has been, I don't know, just sort of once we started putting it out there, it just was so completely natural. But yeah, it took the leap to do it at the beginning, sort of June time. But, you know, a little bit of planning before that. And I think, yeah, it's really exciting. It's really, really exciting doing, I mean, how exciting is it? You get to build your own agency. You get to, you know, carve out a vision and understand what you want to be doing. And yeah, I mean, such an incredible opportunity. I mean, we're also incredibly lucky to be in a position where we can do this.
Yeah, it's super exciting. I think when we'd first sort of seen like the press releases and things coming out, we were like, everyone at Unknown was like, ooh, what's this going to be? It's like, it's just, I think I really like, love to see people setting things up that they're truly passionate about, and you can see that there's a lot of love that has gone into it and it is bred from that. And even with the work that you've just like come out and everything like that, you can see exactly why you were set up, and it's so true to it, which is so cool. But yeah, I know that we had a joke about the fact you're like, I'm an adult and I have to deal with all of this side of stuff that I've never seen before, which to be fair, is that commerciality side of it, isn't it?
Yeah, you're suddenly a business owner. So you're running a business and doing a lot of work as well and building the business and going out there and finding clients. And it's just, yeah, it's such a learning curve, but in the best possible way.
Yeah.
So it's been, yeah, it's been great. It's been a absolutely wild 6 months.
Yeah, I bet you're very ready for Christmas break.
I'm very ready for Christmas. But it's also been a great one, you know. I mean, to still be here and operating and like, you know, getting momentum and finding our feet as an agency, I think is just absolutely brilliant. And I mean, such a great end to the year, you know, really positive. And I, you know, I'm actually really excited about coming back next year and sort of getting stuck in again. And I mean, it's just great. It's probably the first year in a very long time that I will come back from Christmas actually excited to get, rather than like, I don't want to work.
I know, it is wild when you think about it. And it's probably quite timely in the sense of like, it's a forced reflection period, when I think I always say, for me, Christmas is like the main tools down because everyone else is not doing anything either, so you don't have that like kind of guilt of not doing because no one else is doing and you're not expected to. And I think it actually, it gives you a natural time to reflect and then be able to come back and be like, okay, yeah, I know, like, we've got this far, I know now what we need to do, how we should do it, what we've done so far has been great. Like, I think it's just so well timed, which is exciting and so good to already know that you're going to feel refreshed and ready to come back, because I do think that that is something that people just don't talk about. I mean,
yeah,
I have like a week holiday and I am holiday blues for like months and I don't know what it is about me. I just can't shake it off. But everyone that I work with now knows, and they're like, oh, she's just come back off holiday. Like, that's all. It's just normal.
Leave her alone for a little while.
Yeah. Don't touch her. Don't talk to her for a little while, which is funny. But I think we like spoke about it a little bit earlier on, just on how you've been in bigger agencies, you've been in smaller places, you were also in-house with YouTube for a little while. Like, how do you think all of those experiences have sort of set you up now? What were the main learnings that you've taken from them?
I've been around, as you say, in different agencies, different sizes, different leadership structures. I think I just got to the end of my the last agency I was with, and I just thought to myself, like, I'm not sure that this is what I want anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I was sort of really ready to step up into like ECD position, and I just looked around at the industry and all of the offers on the table, and I just thought, mm-hmm. there's just not anything that's getting me really excited. So that's hence Hijinks.
Mm-hmm.
Big agency, small agency, I mean, massive differences, aren't they? I guess it sort of depends where you go. I've had lots of varied experiences at different agencies. I think obviously bigger agencies, there's a lot of bureaucracy. So obviously there's a lot more people. I mean, arguably, there used to be a lot more opportunity there. Mm-hmm. I think that's really changing now. I think a lot of the sort of medium size and even smaller agencies have great opportunities. Like, big clients are no longer scared to work with smaller startups.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that comes down to relationships as well. That's the people, you know. So I think that the industry is definitely, definitely changing. And then in-house as well. So I was at YouTube on a contract for just under a year. Mm-hmm. And that was fantastic. I mean, what an incredible bunch of super smart, amazing people to sort of learn from and work with. And it was great, actually, because I got to see from the other side.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Like, how was it when you suddenly become the client and become the person rather than that sort of like weird middle position?
It was really interesting. I mean, it definitely was eye-opening.
Mm-hmm.
I got to see how different, you know, how agencies sort of hold themselves and how they talk about the work and how they handle the relationships. And I think it was definitely a learning curve for me, for sure. It was interesting because I worked within their creative studio
mm-hmm.
part of it. So a lot of them were sort of ex-agency as well, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of really creative, interesting people. What I found was, like, agencies are and you can sort of understand historically where this has come from, but like, so protective of the work.
Mm.
And actually, we were all there to do the same thing. We were all there to achieve the same goal and to make the work as great as it could be. And sometimes agencies being really overly protective probably didn't help.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. Because it's keeping you out. Whereas if you're all, like you said, you're all trying to achieve the same goal. And I do think that there is that element, especially now, clients are bringing creative more and more in-house and actually having, like you said, you're in the creative studio part, they're having dedicated studios for this type of work. The hope is obviously for that to breed more collaboration with agencies, but probably what it is doing is the opposite of it.
Which is a shame,
yeah,
right?
Such a shame.
It's like, a missed opportunity from agencies.
Yeah, it's like, we'll go do our bit and we'll keep our bit. And it's a real weird dynamic. And I think actually, you probably saw it, the side where you guys were thinking, well, we can just do this on our own. Like, we can just take this and do this because we want the best solution, but you guys are making it difficult on the agency side, which is then maybe where we're seeing more and more brands just having dedicated teams where they don't need that external support. Which is such a shame because there's so much still opportunity to be able to do both and run both together.
I agree. And actually even work together, because mm-hmm. if you've got people who understand the business, who know the people that you need to go through in terms of, like, you know, selling up the chain,
mm-hmm.
who understand how to get work made, who understand how to navigate any sort of internal bureaucracy, why would you not want to work with them? And actually, I think that was the biggest thing, is like, actually agencies don't, what I saw was that they often didn't the ambitions, well, they often would come in as if their ambitions didn't align, but they actually probably did, you know?
Yeah.
Because we all wanted to make great work, you know, we all wanted to help each other. And yeah, it was also really interesting to see things from the marketing department side as well. I've never been in that situation, so that's just something that was completely foreign to me. And you know, that's where I soon learned I am a micro part of their day, and they have a lot of stuff to do, and getting a campaign out, you know, is a tiny part of probably what they have to do generally. You know, they've probably got a million other things to do within their day. So I think that just gave me an appreciation for that, really.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic when you actually realize, whoa, everything that is like the be all and end all to me is not the be all and end all to you, and like, nor should it be as well. No. So I think especially when you're making creative work, you want it to be the best it can be, and you want it, and it's like also selfish reasons, because you want it for your portfolio and for your own sake, and you want, like, it's great to have your name attached and credited and something amazing. But and then I think it's so easy to get frustrated of thinking, well, why don't they care as much as I care? And it, like you said, it's like they do, they just also have to care about 100 other things all at the same time. So yeah, it's interesting to be able to get in and sort of gain a newfound respect for that, I think. Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah, it was fantastic, especially with setting up Hijinks, because I think we could do it in a way that felt, I mean, we do co-creation as opposed to collaboration, because we kind of feel like, you know, the client's got a lot to add.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got all of that business knowledge. They understand business problems. They understand how to sell things up through the chain. There's a lot that they understand that we wouldn't understand as much, because we're not part of their world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that definitely helped us find our position for that as well.
Yeah, amazing. And what like an amazing way to introduce yourselves to clients and open up those conversations of saying, we want you in the room with us on this, and we respect what you know about your business, and we're willing to learn that too. Because I think that sometimes there's that disconnect of the business side and the creative work, which is then why things get diluted or they don't get made, because you're on the, like, on different pages right from the get-go. So
definitely. And then again there's this sort of misunderstanding that we're all working towards different purposes, whereas I think when you're working really closely together, you're all working towards the same purpose, you're all working towards the same goal, you've got the same investment in terms of the passion and the energy and the drive to get this across the line in the best possible way. You know, so I think working in that way actually makes better work, and which is what we all want, right? We all, especially as a creative, you want the work to be as great as it can be. So
100%. Why not? Yeah, there's such a common theme just of, we want the work to be as good as it can be, and it's like, why is that not happening? Why is that so difficult to make it happen? It's working out how to simplify that in the most, like, bring it down the most times to actually, we all know what we want, and that is to make the work great. How do we do it? So it's interesting. I think before, when we spoke, we chatted a little bit about AI and creativity, and I know that you've spoken about this before, so I was really keen just to hear your standpoint on it.
Well, I mean, there's lots of opinions flying around. Robots are coming to steal our jobs.
Yeah. I haven't seen that one for a while, actually.
Have you not?
No, not online anymore. I'm like, maybe people have stopped saying it now, finally.
I think maybe some people are starting to understand what it actually is now, so they can probably... Yeah, I think, I mean, it's here. It's moving very fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going anywhere. It's definitely going to change the way that we work, particularly around creativity and the way that we bring ideas to life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've been really quick to sort of... start to use it and to start to look into all of the possibilities around it and embrace AI in a way as much as we can, really, with our knowledge. And I'm quite excited about what it's going to do for production. I mean, in terms of I think it's going to democratize a lot of stuff as well. So I know that there's a lot of skepticism about it, but I think it's going to democratize stuff in terms of production in the same way that probably YouTube did, when everybody could suddenly start making videos and, you know, giving their voice to the world, you know. I think AI is probably going to do that for us. What it probably means for creative departments is that if you look at it in a positive lens, we can probably make more work, right? Like there's going to be less barriers to making the work. It's like, oh, we can't do that because we don't have a £1 million budget. It's like, oh, actually, creativity can actually happen now for way less than it used to cost. In terms of what it does to the agency business, I mean, who knows? In terms of business models and business structures, who knows? But I think anybody who's not embracing it is going to be left behind pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's here. 100%. With a vengeance.
No, I think it leans into that like access side of things as well, doesn't it? And I think even with sort of TikTok, people have access to create in different ways and use that platform for themselves. And YouTube, whenever that came out, and people then had access to be able to create in that sense. And I think it is more and more that is becoming much more progressive, in the sense you don't have to have known about this industry or known what how to get into it. Because I do think there is such a lack of education still that advertising is a thing and it's sort of alive and kicking. I mean, like, I didn't know that advertising was an industry until I was told I had to recruit for it, which was mind-blowing, by the way. Never done recruitment, and was also like, what? I have to recruit for creatives who work in teams. What? Like, just, but there is such a lack of sort of knowledge, education at those like grassroots levels. And I think you sort of touched on it before of, you were in a good position to be working with a tutor that had worked in that industry, so therefore could really help you get into it. Is that something that you've sort of seen and are still seeing on the education front?
Yeah, I mean, definitely we're seeing all of the ad schools starting to struggle to recruit students. I mean, a lot of them in the UK have shut down. There's just sort of less appetite for doing that route into advertising. And I think we're going to have a talent shortage at some stage. We definitely are. And certainly when it comes to any sort of diversity as well. I mean, there's just, we're just going to struggle to attract people, really. You're really seeing a lot less juniors out there. Like, I used to get so many emails from juniors, you know, for book crits and coffees and all sorts. I'm just, there's way less.
Really?
Yeah, which is I think it's a worry. You know, it's probably like, you know, now probably less of a worry given the sort of economic, you know, situation. But I think when things start to pick up and get busy, who is going to be there to do the work? I mean, genuinely, we need a pipeline of incredibly talented young people who want to keep this industry going in a great way. And yeah, I'm starting to see that pipeline go, you know, down a bit.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important that we get out there and tell people that this is a great industry, and actually also show it as a great industry as well, that you want to be a part of. And there's this great job where you get to do something different every day for a different client, get to have great experiences and make interesting creative work. I think that's something we all have a responsibility to get out there and do, really.
Yeah, 100%. And I think juniors bringing them in, and it brings like the energy as well and the creative. And I think it kind of helps to bring that back. And especially in a leadership role, you want those people who want to do it and want to bring all of these weird, mad ideas that you've never seen before to the table, because it then helps you to continue learning. So if there's no one to actually teach, what like, where do you progress from there? Where do you go? And I think I've definitely seen that juniors are coming in from much more unconventional like ways of, I think it's less so about ad school now and more so, oh, I was a creator, or I've been a photographer, or I've made films and done treatments, and which is all amazing, but also they're the people that help supplement the industry in different ways. But you still need the people that have been and had an education on it too, to help and support and cultivate the industry still. So yeah, I do think it's strange that it's just not spoken about. Like, do you think that there's ways that it can be like better known and better shared that it is an industry? Do you think it was probably going to be like school level it's needed?
Probably now, I'd say so. Yeah. I think it definitely, I think back in my day, showing my age, it was probably less like coming straight out of school into advertising wasn't really a thing that anybody did. They you did some sort of either a long time interning, or you found a way in through an ad school. And I think nowadays getting the sort of younger people straight out of school, I think, will be great. I mean, these are people who've been probably creating videos since they were, what, when do you get a phone these days? Like pre-10? I don't know. You get a phone young, right? Yeah. So they've got access to cameras. They've got access to making, you know, software to help create videos. You're talking about TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
They've watched a lot of people do really interesting things around, like, you know, transitions and understanding filmmaking, you know, in a different way. I'm not saying it's like a sort of professional standard, but they've got access and tools that is way more readily available than when I was sort of growing up as a creative. And they'd be doing it for 10 years by the time they finish school or uni or any time, easily 10 years. So actually giving them a path straight into our industry would be great, you know?
Yeah.
And we need to, as I say, we need to do it. We need a pipeline of talented people, and we need to make it accessible as well. Mm. You know, it can't just be the same people. We need people from all different backgrounds and walks of life to be able to have the, you know, to be able to have the opportunity to come in and make our industry great.
That is so interesting, because you are consistently digesting like creative footage, and it like even just made me think about when I was growing up. It's like, if I was to like gain access to a film, it's because I've gone to the cinema or I've got a DVD and I'm playing it. Like, it is kind of mad, isn't it, when you think about it? Or like advertising in that sense, it was very much like the adverts on the TV that I was watching with my parents type of thing. And you're not consistently getting sort of like scrolling on your phone and seeing passive ads that probably at that age you don't even realize that it is an advert, and it is totally for the advertising industry. So yeah, it's really interesting when you actually think about that and how quickly that has changed already. Because I'm not that old not yet, and it is already so different from when I was growing up.
My 11-year-old niece, she has taught her, she's used YouTube Kids to teach herself Japanese and to teach herself how to illustrate anime characters.
Amazing.
And she's in, honestly, in the middle of nowhere in Taranaki, New Zealand, which is like, anybody who's from New Zealand will know that that is literally the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, they might not actually know what it is.
6 hours from anywhere. Oh my God. And she's sitting on, you know, on this farm in the middle of nowhere, you know, learning Japanese and because I always used to say to her, when are you going to come to London to come and visit me? She was like, I don't really want to go to London. I want to go to Tokyo.
Amazing.
You're like, she's 11.
That's so good.
It's amazing.
Oh, I'm obsessed with anime as well. I've only just got into it in the past like year or so. And I tell people and they're like, what? I'm like, no, it's so good. It's so good. Yeah, I'm hopefully going to Tokyo next year. And I'm probably as excited as your 11-year-old niece.
Japan is incredible.
I'm just like, this is real. I'm like patiently waiting for The Boy and the Heron to come out. It's I think it's on like Boxing Day or something, and I keep seeing the ads for it and the posters, and I'm like, oh, this is great. So yeah, I'm glad that she's found that. And also how mad that you can just teach yourself a new language online. Yeah. Like, it's wild, isn't it, when you think about it?
The world's a lot smaller than it used to be.
Yeah, it really, really is. And it all comes down to the access side of it, doesn't it? Which
totally.
We should absolutely be using as a positive, because I think it's often seen as a negative aspect, for sure. I think something that I wanted to touch on as well, we've kind of already spoken around it a little bit, but it's just about your journey as a leader, especially as a female leader, and how you navigated that and how that experience was from sort of starting out to where you are now.
Well, it's definitely, I think it's a little bit, how do I do this diplomatically? I think being a female leader there's a lot more on your shoulders, right? Mm-hmm. So I was always wheeled out for every diversity chat and any you know, International Women's Day. Mm-hmm. And do you want to have a comment about this and women in the industry? And there was a big drive, towards getting more women in creative to be creative directors and in creative leadership in general. And I think at one point I had a sort of senior male in the industry sort of turn around and say to me, oh, it's a great time to be a woman in advertising at the moment. I'm like, when the fuck has it ever been a great time to be a woman in advertising? I mean, honestly. So I've had like great things about it, you know, being able to, you know, set an example and to stand firm for my values and on my values, mm-hmm. And to be there for all of the women in the creative department, always open door, call anytime, happy to chat about probably most things. Like I have zero filter mm-hmm. generally. So I'm sort of really happy to have really open conversations, particularly around salary as well. Like I think that's super, super important that particularly as women, we do that and mm-hmm. have just really frank conversations about that. And yeah, so I definitely try to do that. I mean, definitely ups and downs. There's a lot on your shoulders. You have to be an example, mm-hmm. sort of set an example, and you have to know that if there's certain things that you put up with that isn't right, that you're again setting that example. You're telling people that that's okay, and it's absolutely not. Mm. So hopefully that was clear. That sounded a little bit rambly though.
Not rambly at all, very concise, I actually think. And yeah, I do. It's interesting when you think about the sense of if you're putting up with something that then sets the example that it's okay. Yeah. I think it then goes full circle, like you said, of having that sort of weight on your shoulders to then be able to speak up for yourself and speak out for yourself on behalf of, and then it's not just behalf of yourself, it's behalf of everyone.
Yeah.
Which is a terrifying thing, really, in an industry where, yeah, it is progressive now and it's changing, but it's like you said, when has it been a good time to be a woman in advertising?
Honestly,
yeah, you know. Someone let us know if you do know. But yeah, I think it is that side of it, if you're not, every decision isn't only on behalf of yourself, it's behalf of everyone else in the next generation too.
I think so. If I stayed in jobs, in several jobs, way longer than I should have, and actually I think one of the last times I did that, I knew I was getting paid significantly less than the men at the in the same position as me. I was working twice as hard, and I just thought to myself, yes, staying is great because you get to be supporting all of the people you really love in the creative department mm-hmm. and be there for them, but actually what are you really doing? You're enabling that to happen, and that's completely unacceptable, and you're setting an example. You're saying that it's okay to treat people like that, and that's just something that it's obviously not. So I think leaving was setting a better example than staying, generally.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is what I've always tried to do.
Yeah, and it's really difficult to be sort of cornered into that type of decision as well, and I think it goes back to, we sort of mentioned before, of like being able to take that stand and have that ownership of your progression and your career and your next steps, when in reality that's not always been the case in this industry, like specifically for women. So yeah, it's a really interesting point. How do you think that agencies will need to differentiate themselves to remain relevant and exciting for sort of future generations of creatives?
I think agencies need to stand for something, really. Mm. I think they need to have a position, and, you know, a position in the market. I mean, the market is very full. There's lots of different agencies all saying that they offer the same thing. And I think you're seeing that with a lot of the big networks at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, do you really know what they stand for? Probably not. And especially at the time of sort of these sort of massive mergers, what's going to come out of it? You know, what are they going to stand for? Also, who's making that decision? Is it coming from, you know, here? Is it coming from the holding company? Is it coming from the US? Is it like who's making the decision? And also, who believes it? So even if it's the position, is that really the position? Is that everybody's view on it?
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, finding a space for something that you believe in, I think is definitely. And a very clear positioning is really, really going to be really important in the future.
Yeah, nice. It's like that sort of North Star, isn't it? And actually we're all pushing in that same direction for that same thing. And no matter who you are within that agency or business, you all know that. So therefore it's all going to sort of have the same outcome and the same journey towards it. But yeah, and I think for sure on the bigger holding groups, yeah, what do they stand for? You don't really see it, or it's something generic that is can kind of be fitting for every single one. And yeah, they've maybe lent too much on the sort of work doing the talking, when actually, who are you and why should I want to work for you? Because I think especially the next generations, I don't know what they're all called now, Gen Z.
Alpha, I think, is the younger.
I never know. And I'm always like, oh God, someone's going to say something about that. But they're so much more intertwined with what do you stand for? And does that align with me and my values? So yeah, I do think that there's going to be like a bit of a shock when those types of creatives start coming up and climbing up.
Well, there is a very big difference between being told to what you stand for and actually believing it and living it as well. And I think this is somewhere something that smaller agencies have a bit of an advantage about, because they can be really clear, they can make decisions, they can pivot when they need to, probably a lot faster. Mm-hmm. And also you've got, you know, as a sort of younger person coming in, or as a more junior person coming in, you've got access to the founders and to the senior leadership to be able to actually buy into that as well. You can see how it came about. You can ask the questions. You've got a lot more sort of direct contact, whereas in a bigger agency network, you probably wouldn't even speak to those people, you know? So I think that's where smaller agencies, mid-sized agencies, have a bit of an advantage there. Yeah. Really, you know, people are actually who work together with you believe in it. Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like that freedom of, we don't all have to believe in it in exactly the same way, and it can mean we can have the same sort of North Star and mission, but we can all have different wants and reasons for wanting that and for pushing that forward. Yeah. Whereas I think when you are somewhere that is super big, you're almost all then forced to be on exactly the same page with it.
Yeah.
Because if not, you've then got thousands of people wanting to do different things and it doesn't work. So yeah, it's really, really interesting. My favorite part of the pod is when we ask you to bring something that you absolutely hate, a stinky fish, something that riles you up, and you need to, let us know what it is and we can discuss.
I really hate egos.
Okay, nice.
Genuinely, like, it's just, and I think that's something I found really refreshing, you know, doing my own thing we're able to sort of have a no ego type of setup where we all have an opinion, all have a voice in the room. And yeah, I think generally, yeah, I really, really hate egos. And unfortunately, this industry is full of them. I mean, big, big egos who have been put onto pedestals, and sort of their egos have been fed until they're absolute monsters.
Yeah.
And it's probably, I mean, for our industry, it's probably one of the biggest causes of people leaving the industry is that, you know, because it's terrible. And as an industry, we've allowed this to happen. We've told these people they're incredible and they're amazing, and helped their egos grow so big that it's just, I mean, it's unbelievable. Some of them, you know, it's just like, wow, what is happening? So I think that's definitely something that I think founding hijinks that is like, and sort of non-negotiable. There's no egos.
Yeah. And it's like, it's that set conversation of, you can have an opinion without having an ego, and
totally,
you can be great at something without having to have an ego attached to it. It's just, I don't know, I just really hope that that is something that gets wiped out at some point. But we've done this to ourselves, and we breed it in. And like you said, you're consistently feeding these people that then they're at the point of sort of no return and no clarity. But I do think that that's where it's exciting, that more and more smaller agencies are becoming bigger players and getting the chance to be those players. And it all goes back to what you said earlier on the relationship side of thing. No one wants a relationship with someone who's got a massive ego that's unbearable to work with. So that's where the relationship side is hopefully, maybe, please, gonna save like that part of the industry.
And also trying to attract talent as well, you know, because that is going to be a big thing in the future. It's like, you're going to want to attract the best talent. And I think having no egos and having just a really, you know, flat level structure where everybody gets an opportunity, and, you know, people are a lot more, I don't know, just sympathetic to to everybody's different lives and I don't know, work-life balance and everything, all of the great ingredients that go into making people's careers good, I think the people who get that right will win the talent war, really. We'll start to see a lot more like talent. I mean, I just think younger people, we're talking about Gen Z and Gen Alpha, I just think that that generation just isn't going to put up with it.
Yeah,
they just don't want it.
They don't take any shit.
They really don't. They probably have a bit to teach my generation. From that point of view, I just think the sort of the things that are non-negotiable to them, I think it's valuable that we all learn from that. Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. I'm going to leave it on that because I think you articulated that so beautifully. Thank you so much for joining us for an episode. Really enjoyed chatting with you.
Thanks for having me.
No, all good. It's been fab.
Amazing.